Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, January 25th, 2014. This is episode 1051. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. The cloud-based phone system we use just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs and RingCentral costs under $25 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time for the Tech Guy Show, where we talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and digital photography and all that jazz. Home theater coming up at 33 and a third after the hour with my buddy Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, you want to talk high tech, a little hand holding on the information superhighway. Remember, we used to call the internet the information superhighway? What was that all about? Heather Amon is here, the phone ranger. She's dressed today as Stevie Nicks. Are you going to...
Oh, no.
But it's true. A lot of lace.
I'm always afraid of crossing that line.
You've crossed the Stevie Nicks line. No, you look gorgeous. What are you talking about?
Though,
oh, good. Oh, then you're all right.
So you know.
You're safe.
Okay. I'm going to lose some fringe.
If you call 888-827-5536, toll free from the U.S. and Canada, you'll get Heather. She'll help you out. Help you quantify your question and get you on the air. 8888 Ask Leo. Easy to remember. We also have a chat room. Actually, the best, you know, if you only have to remember one thing, if you only have enough lead in your pencil to write one thing, write techguylabs.com down. You almost spit out your coffee, I think, on that. Techguylabs.com down. And
this is so squirrely out of the gate.
You never know. What's going to happen? When you go to techguylabs.com, that's our free website. By the way, and I have to say this. You know, I think the web is free. It should be free. But there are things on the web that you have to pay to use. You know, the Wall Street Journal. Increasingly, they call those paywalls. I don't believe in paywall. I don't like paywalls. I like the idea of being as many eyeballs as possible. As many people who want to see it, get them to it. What we do is ad-supported content. So we have advertisers, wonderful advertisers. You hand-pick them. And those people pay to be, you know, to get to you through me in a responsible adult way. And then as a result, we can give you everything for free. I just like that model better. So when you get to techguylabs.com, you'll see there's show notes, audio and video, too, from all the shows previous. Can't control the YouTube. Sometimes the YouTube puts an ad in there. That's all right, I guess. It's not a paywall. There's no ads on the audio. They also will give you a link to our chat room. Always fun. That's free, too. 1,000 people in there. And that's free because we don't pay our moderators. Thank you, guys. They're all volunteers. They're free, too. What else? You also can find a phone number there. And questions and answers from all the previous shows. Not going back to the days of the information superhighway. I do go back to those days. I started doing this kind of show in 1991, before internet use was widespread. And I remember in the mid-90s, we spent a lot of time, John C. Dvorak and I, explaining to people how to get on the information superhighway. It's more like, sometimes like a back road nowadays. So many people on it. It's a traffic jam on the information superhighway. It's crazy. Speeds are getting faster, and you can do more and more. Netflix has announced they're going to start offering what they call 4K video. You thought HD was high res, high quality. They're going to double that in both directions, four times higher resolution. House of Cards, which comes out, I think the new season of House of Cards, the Kevin Spacey show that was made, produced by Netflix, comes out in a few weeks, and that will be their first. They shot the show in 4K, super high resolution video, and then didn't release it that way last season, but this new season will be released that way. If you have enough, if you have enough lanes in your information superhighway, anyway. We're still not quite to that point. We're getting there. A lot of you do. It's getting fast, but not a lot faster. Here's an interesting study. Do you use Facebook? I talk about Facebook a lot. Facebook is so interesting because I think that everybody uses it, but most people hate it. It's the service people hate to use, but use anyway because that's where your friends and family are. It's where you stay in touch, right? You can't help it. Some researchers at Princeton's Department of Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering are releasing a study. Actually, they released a study in which they say they used the model of infectious disease to predict the future of Facebook. So they say Facebook's growth is about to come to a quick end, much like an infectious disease that spreads rapidly, then suddenly dies. They say that disease models can be used to understand the mass adoption. It is kind of like a disease, isn't it? I mean, that's not too far-fetched. That we say it's viral, right? It spreads like a virus. But like a virus, these things die quickly, too. Remember MySpace? The study updates traditional models on disease spread to assume that recovery, getting better from the disease, requires contact with somebody who's not diseased. In other words, doesn't use Facebook. So this, okay, now I don't know about the methodology. It's an interesting idea. This is their conclusion. Facebook will see a rapid decline. People are about to get better. The virus is about to die out. And they say between next year and 2017, over the next 3 years, the site will lose 80% of its users. Facebook users will lose interest in Facebook over time as the rest of your friends and family lose interest. Isn't that the case? If everybody you knew suddenly left Facebook, you'd leave, right? Of course you would. The only thing keeping you there is your friends and family. It's kind of like a sweater. This is my model. It's a sweater with one loose thread just hanging there. And you start pulling on it. And then it doesn't take long before you got no sweater. You ain't got no sweater. Pardon me. Let me correct my English there. I think this might be the case. What do you think? Do you feel like you use Facebook under duress? That you're kind of made to use it? You don't want to use it, but you kind of have to use it?
It's like that accident scene.
You can't go by it without looking.
Take a peek.
Every time I go back there, I do, and I go back there. I don't, by the way, and this is, I think, part of the problem Facebook's facing right now. You don't really, you would think if you'd go to Facebook and you'd look at it, you'd see your friends and family. But they use a lot of computer algorithms to figure out what to put on that news feed. And they're trying to make it more newsy, less about friends and family. So you don't always see, let's say you follow your mom on Facebook. You won't see everything she posts there. And she won't see only all the grandkids. I mean, I'm seeing stuff people, I mean, they're friends. But first of all, the second item's always an ad, right? An ad with an endorsement from one of my friends, which really is frustrating. Don't like brands on Facebook, because if you do, then you will be in an ad that your friends will see. Leo Laporte likes Depends. See, that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. Then, okay, here's an offer from a restaurant. Then another guy I kind of dimly know, but he's got a video of an amazing and powerful street guitarist. Facebook likes that. They want to see more of that stuff. And then here's some stuff from, so there's a whole bunch of companies now like LifeBuzz and Upworthy that are making posts designed to make it to the front page of Facebook. They often have a question and they often tell you what to feel. This girl is dying, but you won't believe her final words and what they mean for the future of your life. How can you not click on that? Although what we're finding with research is a lot of this stuff, more than half that's shared on Facebook, people aren't reading. They just, they go, oh yeah, I'm going to share that, the headline. They're, everybody's in such a hurry to be the first to share something that you don't read the article. You just post it. Amanda found out she was dying. She announced it on Twitter. Her final posts are absolutely, I don't know. I got to read that. That's real, by the way, on my timeline. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk. I don't want to read this. It's junk food. It's link bait. It's the big sleeves. Go ahead, do this. Wave your scarf.
But remember in Sid and Nancy, I think the Courtney Love character goes, oh my God, I look like Stevie Nicks. She just put her outfit together a little too something.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, you know, Courtney Love was in the news this morning. She won her defamation case. The first example of a Twitter defamation case. Guess Ms. Love, the widow of Kurt Cobain, had been suing the people running Cobain's estate, saying that they weren't doing the right thing with the money or whatever. Became disillusioned with her attorney and tweeted that her attorney was paid off effectively by the estate. The attorney sued. You don't want to defame an attorney. They got lots of legal time, just sitting around, not doing much. They'll sue you. She got sued and won. Courtney Love won. I don't remember. I'll have to look and see if it was a jury trial or a judge. But the finding was that a couple of things. One, that they believed Courtney Love when she said, oh, no, I meant that to be a direct message, a private, and it's not right. That was clearly a public tweet. Clearly a public tweet. In fact, let me read you the tweet, and you could tell me, does this sound like a direct message? News junkie, I was devastated when Rhonda J. Well, I won't say the name of the attorney. I don't want to get sued. When my attorney was bought off, she said, now, I guess that could have been a direct message to that person, news junkie. She said she thought she was sending a direct message, not a tweet visible to the public. She did erase it right away. Then the Barbara Streisand effect kicks in. You've heard about that. Streisand sued because her home was visible on a map or something like that. And of course, nobody knew it until she sued. And then it began, let's go look at Barbara Streisand's house on the aerial map. So Love said in court documents, 'twas the tweet in the forest that no one saw, with the exception of one or two people, until the lawsuit was filed, and then everybody saw it in the papers. Anyway, she won. It was a jury trial. One juror said that although the decision was swift, it was not without debate. Everybody took it very seriously. We were arguing and trying to follow the instructions. I don't know if this means that you can tweet with impunity. I still think you could get sued for libel or defamation if you tweet something that's defamatory or libelous. I don't think it means Twitter is a safe place to use for that kind of stuff. 8888 ask Leo, but Courtney Love will not have to pay. The jury said you did not defame your attorney in a tweet. They call this, by the way, twibel. I'm not making this up. That's what the Los Angeles Times calls it. It's a Twitter libel. It's a twibel. Okay, just, you know, add that to your dictionary. Who knew that selfie would make it to the Oxford English dictionary? You know, you can't always tell. It was twibel. 8888 ask Leo. Heather, who should I start with today? I've got a full board of calls.
You sure do, and great questions. Mary in L.A.
Okay.
Has a question.
Let's do it. Hi, Mary. Leo Laporte, the tech
guy. Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Oh, glad to be here again. And I wondered how that was pronounced. I thought twibble didn't
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's twibble. It's certainly drivel. twibble or twibble. I don't know.
Yes,
I like twibble. Sounds like Elmer Fudd saying tribal. It's twibble. Oh, wow, you committed twibble.
That's great.
What can I do for you, Mary?
Well, Leo, I don't know if you know about the VOIP Jaja.
I've never heard of it. Spell it for me.
Jajah. We got it in the UK, and fabulous, cost 3 cents a minute to, you know, from Los Angeles to the UK. And it was one of those, you enter it on the web, there's no special equipment, you're not tethered. It calls your phone, any phone that you want it to, and then when you're on the line, it calls the other party. So
I guess they weren't charging enough. I see they're going out of business at the end of the month.
That's why I'm calling.
Yeah.
So I've looked around to see what could replace it. Some of them want me to have a different phone number. Others are tied to the computer. You're kind of stuck there. So
the idea is using the internet to make voice calls or sometimes voice and video calls. Everybody knows about Skype, and Skype certainly is one solution. You can use your phone with Skype. You can even have a phone number with Skype. Or you can use your computer with it, or you can even use the Skype apps on all smartphones. And those are also pennies per minute. Skype is owned by Microsoft. I don't think it's going to go out of business anytime soon. There's quite a few of these. The other one I use is Google Voice, although international is somewhat limited with Google Voice. Skype, you know, my daughter went to France to study for a year in high school a couple of years back, and what I did is I bought her, at the time it was $99 for a year, a Skype Out account, which allowed her to use her computer to make video calls. Of course, Skype is always free computer to computer, but she could use her computer to make audio calls to any phone in the U.S. for free. So it was nice because she was in France and we would just hear from her whenever she felt like it. She could call cell phones, she could call landlines, and it was very affordable. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Scott just moved on then. I found one, Leo, and I had a question that it had seemed to have the same kind of setup, a little callback kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's called Spaxtel. It's based in China, and I started getting jittery about that. And, you know, that's Hong Kong, I guess. But do you think there might be any security kind of problems with that?
Faxtel, huh? Well, it depends. I mean, look, we already know the U.S. government's listening. So if the Chinese government's listening too, does that bother you or is that?
I guess you got a point there.
I mean, what are they going to hear? I mean, really, come on.
Yeah.
It's not like you're Jason Bourne or something, or are you? If you're Jason Bourne, don't use it. But if you're just making calls to, you know, your Aunt Mildred in Bristol, England, about the weather, I don't think the Chinese military really cares. And I think the NSA probably doesn't really care either. There are a lot of these choices. I've used Talkatone. I've used Tango. It's almost endless. And I don't know if what the best one is or not. The chat room's throwing out names like crazy. I think this is the kind of thing that's fairly common. So if you do Skype, you can get a Skype Out, which allows you from your computer to call any phone number. And then you do pay a few cents a minute for international calls. And then you can also use Skype with a phone. And it doesn't, you can use Skype In, which will ring your phone number. I have a Skype In phone number. It's in my area code. It's just like a regular phone number. People can call it. And it will ring my Skype on my computer. Or you can have Skype Out. So I would look at Skype. Certainly they have the best call quality. And because they're backed by Microsoft, I think they're going to be around. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek or guru, depending on how you feel, is here. He is both to help us
both.
Out with home theater issues and problems. That could be big screen TVs. It could be surround sound. What's up, Scott? Hey.
Hey. How you doing?
You can catch Scott's work on the AVS Forum, where he's in charge of the editorial over there.
Yep, avsforum.com.
Cool.
Hey, yesterday I was lucky enough to spend some time backstage at the Grammys as they're putting it together.
Yeah, no, it's coming
Sunday.
Tomorrow, yeah, Sunday.
Tomorrow, that's right. And they always spend a few days, actually a week, setting it up at the Staples Center in L.A. And they have dress rehearsals. One of the coolest things about the Grammys that I really like is that all the performances are live. You know, they're actual
they
band.
They don't lip sync.
No. They do have occasionally some backing tracks. And I talked to the guy who actually is in charge of the backing tracks. And how they sync those up with the live performance and everything. It's quite fascinating, actually. But primarily, and for the most part, everything is performed live. And I really like that. And so they actually have to rehearse. So they spend 3 or 4 days rehearsing. Today's their last day of rehearsal. Tomorrow morning, they'll do a dress rehearsal, run the whole show. And then in the evening, they go, and it's wow. 3 hours plus and whatever. Tons of great acts are going to be there. I got kind of a scoop. I think everybody knows that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr are scheduled to perform separately.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought, that's a shame. Where's an opportunity for a Beatles reunion such as that?
Well, I found out they're probably going to actually be on stage and perform together.
Oh, that would be really historic, wouldn't it?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
That would be
seriously
quite
historic.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have they ever? Well, I mean, I think they must have at some point done this before.
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, they're the only two remaining Beatles, so that would be a Beatles reunion. It's worth watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I saw Steven Tyler on stage rehearsing. Robin Thicke is going to join Chicago on stage. There were some groups that were so new that I didn't recognize them, but I'm sure the youngsters will.
Yeah, we'll just say names because Heather knows everybody. She's an expert in rock and
right.
roll. Yeah,
right. Well, I'm definitely going to watch. They broadcast it in 5.1, and I asked about, you know, well, what's in the surround channels, and they said, well, mostly it's the audience ambience.
Teenagers you want screaming.
Screaming. Well, probably not. The guest list, the people who can attend, you know, that's a very exclusive kind of guest list.
Oh, yeah.
I've actually been a couple times in years past, but somehow my invitation got lost in the mail this year. I know.
Well, that sounds like fun. That's tomorrow if you're listening live on most of these stations.
That's right. That's exactly right. So anyway, I always get a bunch of questions, and I love answering questions. I got one from Eric Moberg, who has a very small theater room, only 10 feet by 9, which is pretty darn small. And he would like to use a projector in this room, but isn't sure about which one to get or what screen size he should use. And I'm thinking, boy, at 10 feet, first of all, I would not put your seat up against the wall, assuming you're going to use the long dimension of the room as your viewing axis. I would not put the seats up against the back wall because the bass tends to build up back there. It doesn't sound as good. You really want your seats out in the middle of the room to some degree. So you're going to be sitting actually less than 10 feet from the screen. And I'm thinking, well, let's see, 8 feet. At 8 feet, the ideal screen size is about 60 inches diagonal. And that's a very small image for a projector. Now, you can do it. In fact, I do it in my home theater. But my home theater is for two, and it is very small. And the black levels that you get from a projector putting on a screen, putting an image on a screen that small can be problematic. They can be pretty high and look kind of grayish. So I would recommend you think about a flat panel because there are plenty of 60-inch flat panels or even 70-inch that would be probably serve you better than a projector in such a small viewing area. If you can find a 60 or 65 inch one of the Panasonic plasmas, we've talked about those before. Panasonic is getting out of the flat panel or the plasma business. We know that for sure. And the plasmas that they made for 2013 are becoming scarce. So if you can find one at 60 or 65 inches, that would probably be what I would first recommend. My colleague Mark Henninger put a piece up on AVS Forum yesterday, I think, about bargain hunting for plasmas. He loves to go and do open box shopping. Do you ever do that, Leo?
Yeah, with mixed results.
Yeah?
I bought an open box TV once, and it still had stickers like marked down. So it's with mixed results, but you get a great deal. Open box shopping?
Open box shopping is when either a customer has returned a TV for whatever reason, or it might be the store sample, the floor sample, you know, that they were using to demonstrate the TV. And people often recoil from that idea.
That's what I got as a floor sample.
Okay, they recoil from that. Yeah, but they say, oh, well, it's been running 24/7 for a year, it must be horrible. Well, no, not really. I mean, even if it's been running for a year, plasmas are rated to last 60,000 hours, which is, I think, something like 13 years at 8 hours a day.
How much reduction should you expect to make it worthwhile?
Well, that's a good question. I don't actually know. I'd have to ask Mark about that, about specific numbers.
You want 50% off or more.
50% off. Yeah, exactly. But if you could find a Panasonic ST60, VT60, or ZT60, that's their top-of-the-line flagship plasma, in an open box special at 50% off, or I'd even be happy with 25% off. Do you know that ZT60s and VT60s, the top two lines, are now being sold for more than MSRP when they're new
they're
in
not
the going
to make them anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, you know, if you can find even 25% off, 30% off, something like that, it's going to be a great deal. And that TV is going to last you a good long time, and it's going to look fantastic.
Yeah. So what's the difference between a refurb and an open box? Are they the same sometimes, or are they different?
Well, if a customer brought back a TV and it had a problem, very often the retailer will have it refurbished.
Yeah.
And if it's refurbished, then it should be as good as new. And it should come with a warranty. That's the other thing.
That's a big difference. Warranty. Yeah.
Exactly. I must admit, I'm not 100% sure if a store demo comes with a warranty. Also, the store demo might not come with the remote.
Right.
Or the stand.
Right.
It's
much more of an as-is purchase.
Exactly.
At least that's the sense I get. The refurb, they can't sell it as new, but it's kind of like new in the box. The open box, they're saying, hey, what you see is what you get.
Exactly. So you're taking a little bit of a chance with an open box, but if you get, you know, a tremendous discount, like 50% or something like that, you know, it may very well be worth it. And of course, you've got programmable universal remotes that you can get that will work the TV. And if you're going to wall mount it anyway, you don't need the stand.
Right.
On the other hand, most people don't wall mount their flat panels. They put them on stands. So you have to take that into consideration. What are you planning to do?
Right. Does it make any difference, plasma or LCD? Or should I be more worried about an LCD being worn out than a plasma?
No. Plasma has more opportunity for image retention and burn-in, but these days it's not really much of a problem at all, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com, and his Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Google Voice does do UK pots, 2 cents a minute. That's good. So that would be another good choice. All right, Scott Wilkinson, take it away. Yours.
Why, thank you so very much. Somebody in the chat room here just talked about getting a refurb an open box Denon receiver. I'm looking for it. Here it is. Jeff N. I got an amazing deal on an open box receiver, a Denon, for 60% off. So that's pretty good. Archandra in the chat room says, my refurbished Roku 2 had handwriting in the manual. Not that I really used it. Well, the manual's PDF anyway. But yeah, you know, there might be something like that. And in fact, Untoward, Best Buy, is what my colleague Mark Henninger recommends, is where he always goes, and he always buys stuff open box and has generally good luck with it. So, let's see. Yes. Beatmaster put a post in the chat room about the article that I was referring to on AVS Forum. Exactly right. Post CES Bargain Hunter's Guide to Panasonic Plasmas. Himtez is asking, what's the best brand for wall mounts? I don't have a lot of personal experience with wall mounts. Sanus, I think, is a very well-known brand and undoubtedly very good. I don't really have a lot of information on that. iPad 8742 says got an ST60, Panasonic ST60. Love it, but definitely getting news channel graphics image retention. Very good point. News channels have these often have these tickers along the bottom of the screen that'll show financial information or other news besides what the person on the screen is talking about, which I always find very distracting. You know, it's like, which do you pay attention to? I can't pay attention to both at once, and I don't think anybody can, despite what they might claim. Nonetheless, that does pose an image retention problem. So if you leave the TV on the news channel all the time, yes, it's going to be a problem. But if you move off the news channel and watch other stuff that doesn't have something relatively static, or even that's not static exactly, but it's a well-defined area on the screen that's always there, you shouldn't have a problem. Panasonic plasmas always have image retention prevention measures, such as what's called pixel shifting or orbiting, in which the image moves around a little bit once in a while. You don't notice it, but it happens that way. There's also a screen wipe function that fills the screen with white and like a black bar that may scroll across the screen. So it shouldn't really be too much of a problem. WD Mark PC says, I picked up a great open box on an LG 24-inch HDTV monitor. You can actually search the open box for specifications at Best Buy. Oh, that's right. Best Buy does have a part of their website that addresses this. Oh, and J5JCH says, another advantage to open box, you can usually return it without any restock fee. So it's a great way to try out a model. I hadn't known that. That's great. Boy, a lot of people in the chat room have had good success with open box. So that's very good. Jeff N., if you focus on the Magnolia Room at Best Buy, they tend to be more knowledgeable and will give you free compatible remote if you don't have the exact one. Oh, that's great advice. That's great. Becky is asking me if that's Bender behind me on my shelf. Yes, indeed it is, the Bender Shiny Robot. Hey, Ken Crayley, good to see you. Let's see. I just saw one here. Web 1808. How good are Boston Acoustics A70s? Here we go.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Chicago.
Ah, my favorite band.
Performing with Robin Thicke.
Yep.
Chicago, the entire band will be topless. It's going to be very exciting. What rhymes with In the Park? I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You seemed excited by Scott Wilkinson's report that Chicago will be performing at the Grammys this year, Heather, with Robin Thicke.
For sure.
Because we like Robin Thicke. We loved Blurred Lines. That was a great song. And, of course, who doesn't love Chicago? We're listening to Chicago right now.
Classic.
Do you think Robin Thicke will twerk with Chicago?
I hope not.
Or do you think Chicago will twerk with Robin Thicke?
No twerking.
No twerking at all.
But a jazzy version of Blurred Lines could be cool.
Oh, with big horn section? That would be very cool. Yeah. All right. That's what I want. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Our next caller comes to us from Canoga Park, California. It's Robert. He fell over. Sorry, Robert. Didn't mean to scare you. Robert on the line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Leo. So this is kind of a new thing because I would like to say I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller, but it's kind of weird because I'm a new listener, yet I've heard your last, I would say, 600 shows within a few months.
Wait a minute. So now we make them all available via podcast, but 600 is a little too much. Is that every day for 2 months? No, it's more than that. Wow.
As soon as I get to work, I put on the next episode, and then the next, and the next plays automatically. So that's what I've been doing for a few months now.
Wow. Yeah, so you are a long-time listener. You've listened to more shows than most people have been listening for years.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Welcome.
Well, listen,
it's nice.
I just got my first Mac, which I've been wanting to get for about 15 years. I finally saved up enough money to get one. And I noticed that you do the updates for Flash yourself. And I'm thinking, how do I do that? Because I had to download Flash also, but
First of all, Macs don't come with Flash. Steve Jobs very famously hated Flash, and pretty much put a nail in the coffin when he said we're not going to support Flash on the iPhone or the iPad. However, you can't not support Flash on a desktop. So there are a couple of things you can do. One is, if you want to continue to use Apple's browser, Safari, is simply download Flash from make sure you get it from the Adobe website, not some phony Flash.
Right, that's exactly my point. That's what I did. But I noticed you said you do the update yourself. So whenever I start YouTube, if there's an update for Flash, it comes out. The problem is, how do I know it's not one of those things that just come out that's not actually
right?
Flash, that actually
so think about bad guys. What a great way to get stuff on your computer. In order to get on your computer, a bad guy has to get you to run a program, whether it's malware, adware, whatever. You got to run a program. So a great way to do it, in fact, it's a very common scam, is to say, you don't have the latest Flash player. And then it's not Flash that you're downloading. So I always do it manually. I always go to Adobe's website to get Flash. I think it is. Is it Get Flash? I'm trying to remember what the direct page.
Yeah, it's getflash.com.
Getflash.com. Or adobe.com/getflash. I can't remember. But you really want to make sure that you get it from that source. Now, here's the deal. Once you install Flash, it will auto-update. So you don't have to worry. And no website should ever say that to you, and ignore it if it does. There's another alternative, which is to use Chrome. Google's Chrome has a safe version of Flash built in. You don't ever have to worry about it. And I think on the Mac, this might be the best way to use Flash, is to not use it in Safari and ignore any requests for Flash from Safari. And when you want to go to a site that supports Flash, like YouTube, although, by the way, you can tell YouTube, I don't want to use Flash, and then it'll use HTML5. If you go to youtube.com/HTML5, you can say, from now on, I don't want to use Flash. And that would be good, because then you won't get Flash fished. But if you need Flash, you do it in Chrome. This is what I do. And Chrome comes with Flash built in. And furthermore, it's what they call a sandboxed Flash. It's not a Flash that has access to the rest of your system, but it's stored safely within Chrome. Get.adobe.com/flashplayer. That's the get.adobe. So that's your alternative. You can go to get.adobe.com/flashplayer and download the standalone installer. I'm in Chrome, so it says your Google Chrome browser already includes Adobe Flash Player built in, so it doesn't. It just ignores me. So you have to do it from within Safari. I think if you really want to maximize safety, is to do that, but it's less convenient. You know, there's a real trade-off between safety and convenience.
Okay, so if I wanted to keep using Safari, the only way to do the update is going to the website. Not really trusting that dialog box that comes out?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good idea. Go to get.adobe.com/flashplayer, and you can download it. And then it will ask you, do you want me to auto-update in future? And you can say that. And you should never again see that pop-up. If you do, you can say with some confidence, that's phony.
Oh, I did that. And so I'm not supposed to see the dialog box.
You shouldn't, because you always have the most recent Flash, because Adobe Flash keeps you up to date.
I had no idea it automatically updates. I think
you have to say yes to that. It'll ask you that. So if you said yes to it, yeah.
Oh, that's the dialog box I'm afraid of. I don't know if it's from actual Adobe.
Well, it's hard to tell. That's right. I think this is a real problem with dialog boxes. It can look like a Flash update request.
Yes.
I'll tell you the other thing. When Adobe does that, it will bring you to the Adobe site. Now, don't judge it as the Adobe site just by appearance. Look in your browser's address bar, and it should say adobe.com. And if it doesn't, then don't download it. So that's another thing Adobe does to make it safer.
Okay, by clicking on that dialog box, I would be risking myself. Well, I'm trying to prevent the risk to begin with.
Yeah, I mean,
so you're saying don't trust any dialog box at all?
That's the general advice. You're on a Mac, so it's a little less concerning.
Okay.
But the general advice is, you've got to be careful about something that asks you to run a program. Mm-hmm. If you get a legitimate Flash update, it will not just download and install it. It will take you to adobe.com, and you'll download it there as an actual installer. and you'll have to manually run the installer. And that's inconvenient, but it's exactly the behavior you want. If anything, just kind of automatically installs something, that's something to be concerned about. The good news is on both Windows and the Macintosh, there will always be an intermediate step that says, do you want to install this program? This program comes from the internet. It's not safe. In Windows, it will give you the, you know, user account control pop-up, and you say, you're sure you want to install this? So you always have that one last opportunity to say, whoa. So if something starts to install automatically, that's always a little cause for concern. Flash will never do that. And I think the best advice is to not put Flash in Safari. Use Flash as little as possible. Nowadays, very few sites really require Flash. It's only older sites. Even YouTube now has moved away. Because Flash is just, you know, it doesn't work on mobile platforms and all of that. YouTube.com/HTML5, and you can, you know, opt into the HTML5 player, which no longer requires Flash. And that's awesome. Again, no need if you're in Chrome, but for Safari, it's a good idea. And now with Flash, they do have auto-updating, which means you shouldn't see that pop-up ever again. That's, in that case, it's safe because it's a you're using a legit copy to do the auto-update. And this could happen because Flash has been compromised before. It's compromised. Joe's on the line from Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Oh, I hear the magic music. That means we're going to have to take a break. You want to talk about the unused space on your phone? Oh, yeah. This is a big problem for people. Let's talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, I think, is still here. Are you still there, Scotty?
I am.
All right. You want to do more?
I'd be happy to.
All right, I'll let you do more. I don't have your picture, but I'll just let you stare at Heather while you talk.
So very nice.
I mean Stevie Nicks.
Yes. I don't know if Stevie Nicks is going to be on the Grammys. That would be cool. One thing cool they do at the Grammys is that they set up all the bands with all the microphones and everything on these rolling stands. And they can just roll them on and roll them off. They have two full stages that they set up one while the other one's being used. And then that one, the sort of the curtain comes down on that one, and then they can use the next one. It's all ready to go. And then they set them up alternately. It's really very, very efficient. They're going to have like 20 or so performances, live performances during the Grammys. So it's really pretty cool. We've been talking in the chat room about an old analog video disc format from RCA called CED, Capacitance Electronic Disc. And I hadn't even heard of it before. Apparently, it was back in the 80s, early 80s. And it was a competitor to the Laserdisc. Obviously, I'd heard of the Laserdisc. I have some Laserdiscs and even a Laserdisc player. But no CEDs. I hadn't really ever heard of that. Somebody in the chat room wanted to, you know, maybe buy a movie on CED. Maybe it's on eBay or something. I don't remember. Because it's not available anywhere else. It's not on tape. It's not on DVD or Blu-ray or anything like that. And my thought is, well, unless you have a CED player, there's no point. And this gets to a whole issue I'm sure Leo's talked about many times, in terms of, you know, if you have old media. Like, I've got a collection of old jazz discs and PsyQuest cartridges, and I even still have the drives for those things, but they're all SCSI, so you can't plug them into anything these days. So, you know, they're useless. Same thing with CED. RSX in the chat room is saying, back in the day, CED was the format first backed and adopted by the film studios. I guess there was a fee for Laserdisc that they didn't want to pay. Well, there's always that, isn't there? Same problem between HDMI and DisplayPort, and how HDMI gained such a dominance in the consumer electronics world, I don't know, because you have to pay a licensing fee for that when you don't for DisplayPort. I guess HDMI came out first. I'm not sure about that. Somebody in the chat room can correct me on that if I'm wrong. iPad 88021
Can you explain digital hash? Yes, I can, as a matter of fact. Sometimes when you're watching satellite or broadcast cable TV, and you go to certain stations, certain channels, you will see along the top of the screen a little broken white line. And where the breaks are in the white line changes really quick. It goes... this is called digital hash. And at least it is in my world. There may be other definitions, but in the audio-video world, you see this sometimes. You see this little line of quickly changing, looks almost like code. And that's exactly what it is, in fact. It is a code that is sent along with the signal that you're not supposed to see. But if you have your TV set to what's called zero overscan, or different companies have different names for it, just scan, one-to-one pixel mapping, which I do recommend generally because that means you're seeing exactly every pixel that's in the image. You sometimes, on some channels, will see this digital hash. And it's, you know, it's a little annoying, but and you can always get rid of it by changing the overscan control or sometimes the aspect ratio control. But then when you do that, when you set the aspect ratio or the overscan to something other than zero, other than exactly every pixel mapped precisely to the pixel it's supposed to be, then you get a loss of resolution, you get motion artifacts. The TV is actually doing something called scaling, and it causes a lot of other problems that I prefer to avoid. So I'll live with the digital hash once in a while. Yeah, Sarah Jane UK keeps an old SCSI card for just that reason. Exactly. In fact, I still have an old computer with a SCSI port in case I need to access those things. So I should probably do that and transfer them to something more modern and then just get rid of the old computer and the old disks. Molson is asking, am I going to NAB this year? I hope so. I actually have to talk to Leo about that to see if he wants me to...
No, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
No.
So the answer is I don't know. Let's see. The stage manager, is there any reason you can think of I wouldn't be able to use a TV stand that says it's for smaller size range than my 70-inch, as long as the weight rating is okay? Obviously, the Visa holes would need to line up, true enough. But if I go with a mount-type stand, I can't think of any other reason it wouldn't work. A TV stand, the only other reason I could think of possibly would be a matter of stability. Okay, if the weight rating is fine, okay, fine. But if the TV is too big for it, it may very well more easily tip over. You know, if the stand that's actually sitting on the bench or whatever you have it on isn't big enough, the center of gravity could shift too easily away from outside of the borders of that stand and the TV would fall over. So that's what I would be concerned about there. Let's see. What else can I help people with? Digital hash, we got that. How many titles rolled out on... Many titles rolled out on CED, RSX said. It almost looked like it would succeed, but it failed because of LaserDisc superior quality. Truckee, Selectivision. Oh, yeah, I do remember Selectivision. That was that, huh? I didn't make that connection. Yeah, okay, so Truckee sent a link to Selectivision video disc player. Okay, so if you found one of those, then sure, you could buy these CED discs. So anyway, let's see. Sibelius, Vizio. Ooh, the Vizio TV crapped out. What should I get now? Well, sorry to hear that. I like Vizio. It depends on what your budget is. If you can spend a little more, I like probably my favorite LCD type TVs are Sony's and Samsung's. So if you can spend a little more money, that's what I would get there. If you're still on a budget, how long ago was it that the Vizio, how old was the Vizio when it died? Because if it lasted a long time, well, then, you know, might be time for another one. I can't tell from the model number you wrote there. It's pretty jumbled. But
we got to let you go.
We got to run.
I got to make a call. Okay. Thank you, Scotty.
My pleasure.
Have a great week. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, you can go ahead and get Mr. Jet. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can Skype us out anywhere you are in the world. Johnny Jet's on Skype right now from somewhere in any of the world. Looks like you look like you're in a business center in Malaysia. That's my guess.
No,
okay.
I wish.
Where are you, Johnny Jet? Hi, our travel guru.
I'm in Toronto Airport.
Oh,
and I'm in American Airlines lounge.
I was going to say that looks like a nice airport, but you're in a fancy first class lounge. That's why.
Well, I get an hair free for using one of my credit cards.
Show off. So move the mic away from your beard because you haven't shaved again and it's scratching away. Johnny, you're so scratchy. I can't talk to you. So Johnny joins us each week, sometimes usually later, but because he's traveling, we always want to get him while he's available. He gives us great tips on how to travel using the internet as a ally. You got your smartphone. What do you have there?
A new one. I walked into T-Mobile the other day. Sony Xperia.
Oh, you know, people are raving about those. How do you like it?
I was actually going to call you and see if you recommend. The girl just sold me hard on it. I spent $600.
Whoa! That's unsubsidized.
Yeah.
Well, how long have you had it?
2 days.
And?
I like it. You know what? The big draw was it has a good camera and that it's waterproof, except not salt water, just fresh water.
I wouldn't test that thesis completely, but okay, yeah.
Well, that's how she sucked me in. She's like, come on, because I was going to get the same.
It's waterproof. You're going to love it. But do you plan to go swimming with it? Is that it?
Well, I thought it was for salt water, too, because I go to French Polynesia or Hawaii, and I like to take those photos of like me floating and sending it back to my buddies.
I would treat it as you know, somewhat more hardy than the average bear. I wouldn't dive with it.
Okay.
Seriously.
It says you can't go 5 feet under.
You cannot, but, not even five, huh?
No, I think 4.5 is the limit. Yeah. And you're not supposed to be in the water more than 30 minutes with it. Okay. But so far, I'm happy with it. Although the Skype does not work through here to call you. It works on my computer.
Oh, that's interesting.
I have no idea
nice
why.
Nice screen. You like the screen? And
yeah, it's big.
Good camera. Now, what about the camera? I think nowadays that's the big thing. You got to have a good camera, right?
It has a great camera. It's not as good as the Windows Lumia.
Nothing is.
The one I have, but that phone just didn't have the apps.
Right. This is an Android.
It just doesn't have the apps.
And Android does have everything now.
Yeah, and I can't be giving you guys tips without having all the apps myself.
Right.
So
that's right.
I stepped it up. But I got a couple of sites for you.
Okay.
So one site I featured this week was called VegasChatter.com.
I thought what happened in Vegas. In fact, you know, Vegas has gotten so nervous about Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. They're at the airport. There's signs saying, remember what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Don't be tweeting this. Don't be telling people. But you're saying now there's a place where I can go where I can find out everything about what's going on?
Well, not only that, but the real reason why I'm featuring this website, I actually made it my website of the week and my newsletter this week, is because they have a whole list of all the resort fees in Las Vegas, every hotel. So how much the resort fee is.
What's a resort fee? You mean like using the pool?
Yeah, you know, so this is one problem I have with a lot of the hotels in Hawaii, Vegas, and Florida. So you show up to the hotel, and all of a sudden they're like, well, you have to pay, you know, $25 extra a day for resort fees. And you're like, what are you talking about? What's a resort fee? So it's usually for internet.
Don't they get enough money from you for gambling that they don't need to charge you extra for that?
It's kind of a scam, I think, because they're not getting taxed on it and they're not disclosing it in advance. So that's why I featured this website, because it gives you all, you know, the exact cost of every hotel in Vegas and the ones that don't have a resort fee, which is not many. I think it's five of them, and they're downtown.
Somebody's going to come along and break these guys' legs if they're not careful.
Well, what you can do is you know, if you don't need the internet, or if you don't use a pool or anything, when you check in, you can say, listen, I'm not using any of this. I'm not paying this resort fee. And you can argue it, and sometimes they'll let you slide. But if you do go to use the internet, it's going to cost you probably $18 or something ridiculous. And use the gym's going to cost you $25.
Yeah, they just, you know, all these hotels, not just Vegas, everywhere now overcharges for internet. They know they have you. Now, well, I noticed this is a public.
Lowe's just came out this week, by the way. Lowe's Hotels just came out. It was the first luxury chain, I think, to offer free Wi-Fi. They only have 12 hotels. I'll stay there.
Just not to pay $25 for anything. This is run by Condé Nast. I see they also have Hotel Chatter, not just Vegas Chatter, but Hotel Chatter.
Big site. That's a big site.
Cool.
And that's a great site.
Good stuff.
And I also have a cool app for you if we got time.
Sure.
All right, so check out this app. I haven't downloaded it yet because it's not for the Android. It's only for the iOS, iPhones.
Okay.
But it's called Just Landed.
Okay. So how many times do you stand in the airport wondering, I do this every time. Has my son arrived yet? His plane is late. What's going on? I need this.
So this is for, you know, who's ever picking you up at the airport.
Yeah.
They'll tell you. It'll tell you when to leave for the airport.
Oh.
It monitors the flight of the person you're picking up, and it monitors the traffic conditions.
I need this.
And it tells you how much time
So it's not just flight arrival time. It will also tell you how long it's going to take you to get there on the highway and all that.
Right.
That's awesome.
This one costs $1.99.
I'm buying it. I wish it were Android, too. Just landed, and it's on the iPhone, and you can find out at getjustlanded.com.
I love the concept, though, because I'm always, you know, my wife's picking me up a lot. Like last night, my flight was delayed by 4.5 hours. And
it happens all the time at midnight here in Toronto.
And, you know, then you know there's no traffic. But during peak hours here, man, traffic is terrible in Toronto.
I actually like it that they're charging for it because that tells me that they're going to be around. If something's useful, I don't mind paying a couple of bucks for it. It's the free stuff, and then they go out of business in 3 months. I don't like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm also doing a test right now. I'm waiting for my American Airlines flight. I'm flying to New York to go see my dad. And I just got a notification from American Airlines saying my flight's 15 minutes delayed. Mm. Then another one 30 minutes delayed. But I got one from TripIt Pro telling me my flight's 2 hours delayed.
Oh, so we're going to see who's right.
Yeah, and the agent here says, no, it's not 2 hours delayed. It's only 45 minutes. So let's find out who's right.
Well, you're very comfortably ensconced at the first class lounge.
That's the reason why you want to travel right and you get certain credit cards so you can come in here but not pay the $50 fee.
Find out more, johnnyjet.com. And you can also follow him on the Twitter at JohnnyJet. And look at his Twitter lists. Go over to his Twitter page and look at the list because he's compiled lists of every kind of travel thing you might want to follow on Twitter. A great way to keep up with airlines, keep up with offers and things like that. At Johnny Jet. Johnny, great to talk to you. Safe travels.
Thank you.
We'll see you back in California in about 6 hours.
Who are you rooting for, by the way? Super Bowl, Seahawks or Broncos?
Not the Seahawks.
You don't like Richard Sherman?
No. I'm a Niners guy, right?
So I know you
I'm not going to like the Seahawks. And you know what? I think this is Peyton Manning's year. He's old. He's beaten up. He's like me. And he's still a wily old veteran out there in the field. I just love watching him play. So I'm rooting for the Broncos.
And I love his commercials.
Yeah. Johnny Jet, thank you so much. JohnnyJet.com. You follow him. You will learn more. Safe travels, John. It's great to talk to you. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. By the way, we put a link to Johnny's stuff on our website, techguylabs.com. So you can get all of that there. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you don't have to remember anything that you hear on this show. Just this, techguylabs.com. You go there, you'll find show notes, you'll find audio and video from previous shows. You want to listen to 600 shows? Go ahead, be my guest. It's all there at techguylabs.com, including the links. Now, the Super Bowl ads. Now, see, that's when my team's not in the Super Bowl. It's the ads that I want. Remember, it was very controversial. The first time there was a website that showed all the Super Bowl ads, and companies like Budweiser said, take that down. That's our You pay millions of dollars to get this ad on TV, and you don't want it on the internet? So where do you go to watch your Super Bowl ads? Let us know. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to mention a famous Super Bowl ad then when we come back because this is the anniversary. Today's the anniversary of the release of the iPad, of the Mac, I'm sorry. Actually, no, yesterday was. The Flint Center announcement. And then I bought my first Mac in March 1984. $2,500 on my Macy's card. Still paying it.
How could it be on a Macy's card?
Because in those days, when you bought a Macintosh, you could buy it at Macy's.
No
Believe
way.
It or not, they had a little Mac.
Down there by the kitchen stuff?
Yeah. No. Well,
I'll take a blender.
It was at the Macy's San Francisco. I'm trying to remember.
And throw in that Mac.
Yeah. They had a little, I remember it was a little glass display case in the middle of somewhere. Probably was in the kitchen stuff. And there was a Mac in there, and I had a Macy's card, so I could charge it. I mean, I needed to charge it. It was $2,500.
You were poor then.
Well, and also $2,500 in 1984 was like millions of dollars today.
Car.
Yeah. Yeah, you could buy a car in those days.
Actually.
That's where I bought the first Walkman, was at Macy's. $800 for the first Sony Walkman. Yeah, I bought a lot. You know, they used to sell personal electronics, and that was the way I could afford it.
They don't have much in the way of electronics any longer, though, huh? It's just kitchen-y stuff.
I don't think so, yeah.
I think.
Because there's too many.
Unless you go to the home store.
Yeah.
What LOL? Oh.
One of our chatters says, Macy still sells Apple products through a vending machine in the lobby.
That's right.
I think that's probably true. Leo Laporte, Big Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Before the break, we picked up Joe in Kansas City. Thank you for being so patient, Joe.
Always for you, Leo.
Oh, what can I do for you?
Hey, I'm having a big problem with the messaging on my iPhone 5, and this is what's going on. Under the messaging and usage, I called and got a hold. I went through a chat session, then got bumped up to a senior administrator. I went from 2.3 gig, erased all my messages, went down to 2.2.
It says other, right?
Well, it says saved in parentheses.
Okay.
Next to the messages when I go in there, but there's no other options. And the thing is, they said they know this is a problem. They can't do anything about it. This is the rub, Leo. I got a new phone about 2 weeks prior to that phone call, and I blanked it, and it ballooned back up to 2.2, and that's what it was at before. So I kind of feel like I'm in an X-Files episode, chasing the Illuminati, and Fox Mulder's being very vague about everything.
Yeah.
So I just need a little help from the guru here.
And I don't have any better answer than the geniuses at Apple do. You've deleted all the messages, and it's still taking up space.
2.2 gig, yes.
Yep. And this is not unusual. I'm seeing on Apple's own support threads the same discussion. So here is one response. Whether this works or not, you might want to try this.
Okay.
There's a program called iBackupBot.
Okay.
That will let you... So first you back up the phone. You go to iBackupBot, which goes through the backup, and you can delete it from the backup, okay, and then restore it. Now, that seems like a really dumb thing to do, but it will apparently work. You could also back up, if you don't want to download the software, you could back up your device to iCloud, then go to iCloud, toggle documents and data to off, then do another backup to iCloud, then restore the device from iCloud, and the deleted but not deleted message data will disappear.
Okay.
This is crazy. And I think the best thing to do is wait for a few days, because I believe 7.1 is imminent. And one hopes that Apple, knowing this problem exists, will fix it in 7.1. iOS 7 has myriad problems. I mean, it is a mess. Yeah. And a lot of the developers who received the fourth beta of 7.1 this week say that it fixes a lot of those problems.
Wonderful.
And I'm hoping they know about this. This is a crazy problem. I'm hoping this will work.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. I'll put this thread, because it has some other suggestions. I'll put this thread in the show notes at techguylabs.com. It's on the Apple discussions forum. And maybe it has some other crazy ideas. So, for instance, select Settings, General, Spotlight Search. Uncheck messages in the Spotlight Search. Delete all text messages. Open the multitasking bar by double tapping on the home button. Close all running applications. Restart your phone. It may take one or two times, but apparently that's why it's saving it, so that Spotlight can index it. I don't know. Does that help? I don't know. Some people say these work. It's crazy. This is a bug, not a feature. And I am hoping that 7.1 will fix this and so many others. My iPhone 5S, not all do this, but my 5S reboots frequently. There's two kinds of reboots that you'll see on iOS 7. One is called a springboard relaunch, and springboard is the kind of the interface. So it's not a full phone reboot, but it looks like it because you get the screen suddenly goes black, you get the white apple like it's restarting, but it does it quickly. And that's just a restart of the user interface. That's, while not fun, and you can't answer calls while it's happening and all that, at least it's relatively quick. Mine reboots spontaneously entirely. The rumor about this is that because Apple went to a 64-bit processor, there's some problem with memory, that there's some bad code, and it's a particular problem on the 64-bit processors. I don't know. I think, frankly, Apple is pretty clear there's some cracks showing, that Apple doesn't have enough engineering or good enough engineering to solve these problems, because OS X Mavericks, their new operating system, also has some severe bugs. My Mac Pro loses sound periodically, just loses all sound, and this is a known bug. I have to reboot, and now lately it won't pair with my Bluetooth. I had to order a wired keyboard. These are terrible, terrible bugs. Should not have made it off the factory floor. In days past, probably wouldn't have. But I think Apple's suffering a little bit of a brain drain and or something, or maybe they're trying to do too much too fast. You know, it's interesting because this is, in fact, the 30th anniversary of Macintosh. On January 24th, 1984, Steve Jobs took to the stage, Flint Center, Cupertino, and announced the Macintosh. It's the famous speech. If you've never seen it, it's on YouTube. He's wearing a bow tie, and he introduces Macintosh, takes it out of a case, puts it on there, and the Mac speaks. It says, "Hello, I'm Macintosh," and the crowd goes wild, wild. It was, in fact, also 30 years ago, January 22nd, 1984, that Apple ran the famous ad on the Super Bowl about why 1984 wouldn't be like 1984. So we are kind of in the midst of a 30th celebration. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area and you are a major Mac fan, you might want to visit the website mac30th.com. They're having an event tonight, Saturday night, at the Flint Center in Cupertino, where the Mac was announced. And many of the original Mac team members will be there. They're really encouraging Apple employees to come. It's going to be quite interesting. Expensive tickets. They're not inexpensive. I think they're over $100. But that's going to be quite an event, the 30th celebration at Flint Center, where it was announced. But, you know, in this industry, 30 years is a lifetime. I'm a Mac fan. All my computers, when I buy a computer, I buy Macs. I like Macs. I've kind of migrated away from the iPhone. I feel like it has not kept up with the times, that Android is faster moving, and there's more choice in the Android ecosystem than there is in the Apple ecosystem. But I still use Macs. But I do worry. I don't despair. All is not lost. And I watch with interest to see 7.1. We should see it fairly soon, I think. And it's my great hope that problems like this, which are really nasty, you know, when you have 16 gigs on a phone, losing 3 gigs to deleted text messages is not acceptable. But it's my hope that this will be fixed. I really do. Cameron in La Puente, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cameron.
Hi, Leo. 73
to a ham.
Yep.
W6TWT.
N6ZNC.
You see, we have this little ham moment. Now we can go on.
You actually have met my husband, too. He works for Yaesu.
Oh, Yaesu's great. You know, it is. I have to say, the friendliest community, and I participate in a lot of geek communities.
Yep.
Friendliest geeks ever, ham radio operators. That's amazing.
Very knowledgeable, too.
They're great. I love them.
My question
yes.
is, what I want a dash cam, but I don't. All that's available is online.
Let's talk about this. Is a great subject, actually. We're seeing all these Russian dash cam videos. Hang on, I have to take a break. We'll talk. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just saw the Russian dash cams are cracking me up. I think it's required or something in Russia, right? We're talking to Cameron in La Puente, California, who wants a dashboard cam. 1 million Russians have dashboard cams, according to Mashable, and that's because, well, there's a number of reasons. One thought is that the insurance companies in Russia require it, and I think that's probably part of the reason. The other is that drivers are so bad and the police are so corrupt that it's not a bad thing to have a record of what the heck happened. For whatever reason, if they've sold 1 million of them, it means there's a brisk market in dashboard cams, and there must be some pretty good ones out there. Why do you want a dashboard cam, Cameron?
Because that's the next thing I'm interested in. I have everything else. I have computers. I have iPads. I've got streaming on Ustream. I just kind of find it interesting. Plus, I'm going to be moving, and we're going to be taking a road trip up, and I thought it'd be interesting in case we come across anything. Where we're moving to is going to be Montana. Who knows? It might be hitting deers.
Right.
It could be something that we might need for insurance purposes.
Well, and the nice thing about the way dashboard cams generally work, they don't record everything. They're always recording, right. And after an accident, they've got the last 30 seconds. Because in general, you don't want to see a video of your entire trip, but those last 30 seconds might be pretty interesting, right? So I think this is a great idea, and I think more people should have them. I wouldn't be surprised if you'd even get a break on insurance if you had a dashboard cam. So there's a website, believe it or not, for dashboard cam folks. It's called Dash Cam Talk at dashcam.talk.com. And this has a best bang for your buck. Now, I'm always nervous about sites like this because you don't know if one of them's getting paid or whatever. But at least you'd get a list of all the different dashboard cams. It looks like the prices range dramatically from $50 to $200. A couple of things you'd like. You'd like something that keeps itself charged from the cigarette lighter and that would automatically save the last 30 seconds if there were an accident. Some have GPS, some don't. GPS might be handy.
No, I don't want it. I got that already.
Well, here's why you might want GPS. If it's written into the video, if you do go to court, you can, you could say, hey, it's there. This is where I was. There are, very expensive $1,000 ones. I would say go to this website and read about it. A number of people are mentioning in the chat room a variety of dash cam that they've used. So I'll let James DeRuvo, who does our show notes, collect a few of them from the chat room. We'll put them at techguylabs.com. I've never used one. But I've seen a lot of similar things.
I'm surprised that they're not available to, like, at Fry's or Best Buy, and they all look at me and want to sell me a GoPro.
Right. But GoPro is going to give you great quality, but the GoPro just records until it runs out of battery.
Right.
Or space.
I want something I want to leave in the car but doesn't look like it's a dash cam,
Yes, that's a good idea, too. So I think a dash cam, I do think GPS is useful. Somebody's in the chat room saying GPS can also tell you what speed you were going, right?
Oh.
So very useful if you go to court and you say, see, I was going 12 miles an hour, and this guy ran into me or whatever. Somebody's saying the Cobra drive cam. Cobra makes good stuff. We'll save 3-minute videos, and when the car's full, it just starts overriding. So that's nice. That's probably not a bad idea. I'll tell you, we'll keep collecting suggestions. Maybe somebody will call. I don't know because I've never used one. But, I'm thinking this is a good idea. I might do this.
Yeah, I want something with 1080p because I understand the ones that are not as good as that don't even show the license plates if you get, rear in somebody.
Bingo. That's what you want. You want the license plate. You want to be able to read the license plate.
Exactly.
And I would also inquire with your insurance company and see if they give you a break. Seems like they would. Remember the Russian dash cams? There was a meteor that hit the lake in Russia.
Yep. Everybody got it.
And we saw it in 18 different angles because there was all the dashboard cams saw them. Lou in our chat room, Lou MM is a very smart guy. He says that the Garmin is at Best Buy. Garmin makes a dashboard cam. Garmin's, of course, a great name. And I think there are a lot of these companies like Garmin are trying to figure out, let's see, the GPS, standalone GPS market has crashed. What's our next business? Oh, dashboard cams. I think Garmin would probably make a good one. And that's at Best Buy, so you could at least look at it.
I asked like at Best Buy, and they don't. They tell me they don't have it. They look at me, and they.
It's a little pricey. It's $200. It's the Garmin Dash Cam.
That's not pricey. I think that's about adequate.
I think for an HD recorder, it's got its own LCD display. Yeah. The snapshot feature.
They want to tell me a backup camera.
Right.
They keep telling me a backup camera, and I said no.
This is great because it has a microphone that you put outside your vehicle, or no, I guess it's inside. Oh well. Incident detection sensor automatically saves footage of collisions and incidents, records in high def. This sounds pretty good. I'm going to go out and buy it, and I'll give you a review.
Garmin
Dash Cam 10. Certainly we know the company, and that's a reliable company. Mm-hmm. So, I like
Google
that. Google it.
Okay.
I'm sure it's on Amazon.
Oh, yeah. My favorite.
Hey, thanks for the call. It's great to talk to you, Cameron.
Thank you, Leo.
All right, take care.
88.
73. Ed in L.A., Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm a long time listener, and thank God I got through just now.
Well, welcome. I hope you're not in dire straits.
Well, kind of. I have a somewhat custom built Windows 7 computer. It had four 1 terabyte hard drives in RAID 10.
Okay.
And the other day, I probably overloaded the C drive. There was more than 95% full. I rebooted it, and it now says missing operating system.
Now, are you saying RAID 10 or RAID 1 plus 0?
1 plus 0.
Okay, there's a difference. All right.
Okay.
So 1 plus 0 is striped and mirrored, which is good because mirrored means that if one drive dies, the other one's an exact duplicate.
Yeah, but there's four drives.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, there's four drives. In the BIOS setup, it shows the four drives.
Once the RAID is an interesting beast. Stands for Redundant Array of Inexpensive Disks. The idea was initially two ideas. One, to speed up disk access by having multiple drives, also to make massive disks. Combined 4 terabyte drives, you get 4 terabytes. But then there's RAID. So that's, I can't remember if it's RAID 1 or RAID 0. I think that's RAID 0. That's striping. RAID 1 is mirroring, which means that there is an exact image being made of that drive as you write files to it. So they have two different results. Mirroring is good. It means if you lose one of the drives, you can always get your data back, depending on how the RAID's arranged, sometimes with greater difficulty, sometimes with less. RAID 0 is exact opposite. It means the drive's more likely to fail, because if any one of the drives in the RAID array fails, the whole thing fails, which means you're multiplying your chance of failure by the number of drives. So 0 we call scary RAID. that's for people who want speed and don't really care about reliability. 1 is kind of the opposite. 0 plus 1, I guess, would in theory be the best of both worlds. The question is, how do you recover that data?
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes on some cheaper RAIDs, and I suspect you're using the RAID that's built into the computer.
I'm using the RAID it's an Asus P6 motherboard.
Yeah, so it's what we call a BIOS RAID. It's in the BIOS, and it's basically a software RAID. So the issue is, can you recover the data without rebuilding the RAID?
Can I hold on and tell you what I've done?
Yeah, hold on and we'll see. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Fake RAID or frayed. Be very frayed. I don't know if striping... That's an interesting... If you have RAID 1 plus 0, motherboard RAID, and you lose some data, what do you do? Probably is very specific to the hardware. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Ed in Los Angeles. He did something I don't generally recommend. He used the motherboard RAID software. It's BIOS. They kind of call it BIOS RAID. To get four drives to unite and appear as one using something called RAID 1 plus 0. So, and then the problem is something failed. And you, do you know which drive failed even, Ed?
That I don't know.
So that makes it hard to figure out which drive to replace.
Yeah, I pulled out one of the drives, and only one of the drives. I put it into another Windows computer, and it showed it as a drive 0.
Yeah, that won't help, because if it's RAIDed, it doesn't look like a normal drive, so it just you can't read it.
Yeah, I tried to initialize it, but it still shows that it's a 2-gigabyte drive, although it's a 1. So I think all the information on that single drive is still intact.
Maybe, I don't know.
Well, I hope so.
What you need to do is the ASUS BIOS must have some tool for determining what drive failed. Otherwise, it's useless. Because you need to, normally when you have a problem like this, you take out the drive that failed, replace it with an identical drive, rebuild the RAID, and presuming that the redundancy is in place, it should all be back to normal. But it's useless unless you know which drive failed.
What if I took out one drive at a time and put in and pulled out drive number?
No, that's well, you could do it. It's impractical because rebuilding it takes a long time. There is a RAID tool that's a couple of folks in the chat room are recommending that perhaps can give you this information. It's software that you would you can't get the computer to boot though, right?
No, that's the problem. I can get it into BIOS setup. On the main BIOS setup utility, when I go down to storage configuration, it shows that it says configure SATA as an IDE. If I changed that to RAID, would that all of a sudden be magic dust?
I doubt it. You got to be careful.
I know.
You don't want to write anything on these drives. What you want to do is somewhere, and ASUS must have a way of doing this. In the BIOS, you must be able to see which drive has failed. Otherwise, it's pointless because then if you can't figure out which... So here's what happens. I think one of the four drives had an error. Now you can't boot. Mm-hmm. If you could figure out which drive had the error, you could fix it. If you can't figure out which drive had the error, you're kind of out of luck. Now, some of the chat room is saying maybe it wasn't a RAID failure. Maybe you just have... You know, a file failed, and you could run Windows Recovery on it. And
I put in the Windows disk, and it says there's no operating system to fix.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't sound good.
believe me,
that sounds pretty bad.
I know. Now, it is one of my so my options are to try and figure out which disk failed.
Well, have you run the RAID utility?
No, I haven't, but I have.
That's the first thing you got to do. So you turn on the machine, post comes on, and then there's the option to run the RAID utility. You got to run that, and it should tell you, oh, yeah, drive 3 has failed. Then you just replace it and rebuild. You have to do that all in the RAID utility.
Well, I'm in RAID utility now. Where do I?
I don't know.
Okay, AI Tweaker, Advanced Power Boot. I guess I'll just do
Look around. Yeah, that's the tool you need.
And it might be on the disk that came with the motherboard too, I would assume.
No, it's in BIOS.
Oh, it's in BIOS. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And you do need to. I presume that your controller set for RAID is on. Don't change it from RAID.
Controller.
In the BIOS settings, it says RAID, right?
Well, that's,
you didn't change your BIOS settings, did you?
No, I didn't change it at all. But when I go into the BIOS setup utility main and storage configuration subcategory, SATA configuration is enhanced, and then configure SATA as, and it shows it as IDE.
There's no RAID option?
Yeah, there is a RAID option.
Well, it's got to be in RAID option to begin with. Then you go in the RAID utility. And I don't want to spend too much more time on it, only because this is pretty specific to your issue. But a word of warning. They shouldn't be using these tools. I would never use these tools. If you want to do RAID, you want to do hardware RAID with a hardware RAID controller, not the BIOS setup. I don't know where you are. It's hard for me to tell where you are. You might want to enlist a local expert who can see. I feel like it's probably okay, but you need to You need to browse around. What you want the RAID? You said. I've said enough. I'm just gonna dig a deeper hole. Chris in Lakewood, California. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a question.
Yeah.
My cable company is charging me like $5.99 a month to use a modem router.
Yeah, combo. They lease it or rent it to you. It's a good deal, yeah, isn't it,
exactly.
For them?
I'm renting this thing, and I'm trying to save some money. And I have Magic Jack connected to my computer, and I have Magic Jack Plus connected to my modem. So I went to Best Buy.
So there's two pieces to this. There's a modem and there's a router. You need the modem to talk to the cable company. The cable company will offer you one, but you can also buy them. Ask the cable company which ones they allow. Most of them allow Aris, ARRIS. That's a Motorola company. But buy one that's compatible. You want to make sure it's DOCSIS 3. That's the current standard. And that's your modem, and then you no longer rent it. You buy them. Usually they're around $100, so a couple of years it pays for itself.
Yeah, but
there's a separate piece that's called the router. Yours is a modem and a router. I don't like combining the two because if there's a problem with one, you don't know where. You know, it's just better to have two separate. Plus, you can get better routers if you buy a separate standalone router. So now you're going to buy a standalone router. You can connect your Magic. Get one that's. Do you use Wi-Fi?
No, because I'm directly connected.
You're wired. All right, then it's even cheaper. You get a cheap wired router. You can use your Magic Jack on it. Everything will work fine. You'll be better off, okay. I think.
So that's the solution. I need to get two different ones because the combo won't work with Magic Jack.
Well, I don't know if that's the problem. It's just hard to diagnose because the modem and router are intertwined. And I just generally like to have a separate modem and a separate router. Most of the time, the modem you don't ever have to mess with. But the router, you mess with it. You change settings and so forth. Just separate it out. And the good news is neither is expensive. Netgear, D-Link, a lot of people make the routers. There are a lot of different companies that make routers. I don't like mixing the two. Maybe that's just a prejudice on my part. Of course, the companies like to because it makes it easier for them. They just plug in one box. So you're going to ask your cable company, I want to own my own modem. Which ones do you recommend? It's probably on their website. You get it on Amazon or any electronics store. Get that one. Put that in. Now you've got data. But that's only got one port. You want to use more than one computer or you want to use a Magic Jack in a computer. You need a router for that. You connect that to the router. The router also gives you some additional security, which I think you'll appreciate. Our website, techguylabs.com. If you want to help diagnose that RAID array issue, please be my guest. We'll put the question and the answer up on the show notes. Usually audio and video takes a day or so to get up there. And then there's always a comment section, each and every question. And if you've got a suggestion, an opinion, a better way to do it, please go ahead and put it there. It's wonderful to have that additional information. And because the website's free and open and always will be, I think it creates a valuable tool for people to, in future, get some advice or give some advice. TechGuyLabs.com. Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show, just around the corner. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy Show today brought to you by our phone system. And this is a kind of funny thing to say. You don't think of a phone system really as something until you run your own business. And then it's something. It is a big something. It's something to think about. What functionality you want, how complicated you want it to be, how much you want to pay. Do you want a big old piece of hardware in the basement, a PBX? You know, we're a digital company. We're technologists. We want to use the most state-of-the-art system. So when we built our studios here, it's now been 2 years ago. Actually, I made the decision almost 3 years ago. We didn't have a phone system in the old place. Everybody just used their cell phones. But my employees were pretty clear that wasn't going to work when we got here. We needed to have phones in their desk. Russell, the IT guy, said, this was out of the blue. I use Ring. He says, I've installed RingCentral on a number of our clients. We're very happy with it. RingCentral is a cloud-based, VoIP-based phone system that does everything. Voice, fax, text. They even do video conferencing, HD video meetings now. This is a new feature at RingCentral. I want you to visit ringcentral.com and browse around and take a look. Boy, I tell you, the nice thing about a cloud system is you get additional features kind of automatically. They don't have to come in and replace the PBX. It just got better, kind of without even thinking. They've launched meetings. So additionally to everything we love about RingCentral, and I mean, I'm talking the voicemails through the email, sending and receiving fax messages from your smartphone. I love the auto receptionist that helps you find, you know, greets the callers, helps you find the employee you want, department extensions, all that. And now with meetings, my gosh, this is so awesome. We can have face-to-face meetings with video in high definition. Sharing of desktops, of course. Documents. Meetings makes Ring Central a fabulous... Oops, I don't want to fill out that form. I'm already a customer. Makes them a fabulous choice for anybody who's setting up a phone system. It is the single best business solution on the market today. You know, we were happy before. We're even happier now. Ring Central, all-inclusive pricing, means it's as little as $25 a month per user. And that includes long-distance minutes and all the features. You could start it with a 30-day risk-free trial. And just for our listeners, we got a deal. When you buy a desk phone, a Ring Central desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. I love our phones. We use the Polycoms, but there's a variety of hardware you can use with it. The online meetings is so cool. We have a special number. You can try it out, 800-543-9980. Get that free trial, 800-543-9980, or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And check out the new meetings thing. This is awesome. Ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. Try it today for free for 30 days. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, talking computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, dash cams, 8888, ask Leo. Who's the guy, Heather, on the line who built his own dash cam? What line is that?
Kevin, line 3 in Daytona
line
Beach.
Line 3, Kevin in Daytona Beach. Hi, Kevin, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo, how you doing?
So you built your own, huh?
Yeah, took an old Galaxy S that I had.
Okay. A smartphone. You used a smartphone for it.
Right.
Oh.
And I wouldn't use it for anything else.
Okay.
And there's an application on the Play Store.
Yeah.
Daily Roads Voyager.
Ah, so this makes sense because, you know, you need a few things. Like, but the phone has an accelerometer, so it knows when you've crashed. It has a GPS, right, so it knows how fast you're going. So right. Does this software do that?
Oh, yeah, and then you can, like, if you want to put a, an extra storage card in, if you have that capability on your phone, you can tell it how many minutes you want it to save, how much space you want it to use, and...
This is great.
If something you want to keep happens, you can just tap the screen and it'll save it.
Unless you're unconscious.
Yeah, unless you're unconscious. It does have the accelerometer, the G-force. You can set it for one.
Yeah, it says this auto retain video on sudden shock. Mm-hmm. Wow, this, and it's free.
Yeah, I just use it on the dash with a suction cup holder thing that I get at the truck stop.
Awesome.
Awesome. It plugs right into the, you know, it's just USB, so any kind of charger you can use. And it works really well. And I've got mine set on 1080p, and it takes beautiful video.
Ah, this is great. And many people have old smartphones lying around. This would be a perfect app. So this is an Android app, Daily Roads Voyager. But I searched on the Play Store for dash cams. There's quite a few programs. Did you try any of the others?
No, because this was the only one. Well, this one is free, but he accepts donations.
I have to say, it looks like it does every single thing you want it to do.
It does what I need it to do.
Yeah. The only issue would be in some states, I think there is a limitation on what you can suction cup to the windshield. So you might want to check your local jurisdictions to make sure it's legal to do that.
I drive all over the country and I haven't had anybody.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't impede on your view of the street, I think you're probably all right. This is really cool. I'm going to try it tonight.
Okay.
I mean, since you already have it. Hey, thank you for the tip. I appreciate that.
No problem. Have a good day.
All right, Kevin. Proving we have the smartest audience in the world. That is awesome. Build your own. All you need is an old Android phone, a suction cup mount, and this Daily Voyager. Obviously, you'd have to have a charger that goes into your cigarette lighter because you need the thing to stay charged and all of that. Very interesting. Very interesting. Bill in Los Angeles, you're next. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bill?
Hello?
Hello, welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Hi, Leo. Great show.
Thank
I
you.
Usually work or I'm driving when I'm listening to you. It's always informative. Thank
I
you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Now that the CES is over, I've been reading for years about new LED projectors coming along, but every time I search it on the internet, I don't get anything. So is there a new update?
I got to get Scott on the line because I don't know. He was at CES this year. Of course, these are LCD projectors, but they are LED backlit or LED lit. To my knowledge, the ones I've seen are not very bright. Now, the advantage of LED, of course, is you don't have a bulb that burns out. And those bulbs can be hundreds of dollars on projectors. And so, you know, that's nice. But the LEDs, in order to get bright enough, I wonder. The ones I've seen, the lumens are fairly low on them. So the answer is I don't know. And let me ask Scott Wilkinson if he saw any decent LED projectors on the market. That would be the choice, wouldn't it?
It would, because the bulbs last so much longer.
Right. It would save you hundreds of dollars over the life of the projector.
Mm-hmm.
The issue, of course, is getting it bright enough. I mean, Untoward in the chat room is saying the ones he's seen so far are less than 300 lumens, which is low.
Mm-hmm.
It's low. I mean, you can darken the room and stuff, but, you know, this is the problem with projectors in general, is that the screen is not we're not talking movie theater brightness. And even in a movie theater, you got to darken the room. The advantage of projectors, of course, are that you can get a 180-inch screen. You can as big as you want if you have enough brightness. Thank you for the question. I will get you an answer. Keep listening, Bill. We're not done. Moving on to Juan in Los Angeles. Hi, Juan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Nice talking to you.
Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you?
I have a T-Mobile account that I just opened at $30 a month.
Oh, you got now, is that the one with 100 minutes of talk time but unlimited text and data?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so I think nowadays a lot of us, we don't talk on the phone that much.
Yeah, well, I hardly ever use it. I always carry the prepaid account.
Right. And everybody texts now, right? And data is huge.
Yeah. So since I'm a kind of new guy with the computer, I thought I'd try the one with the free data.
Let me know, because that's intriguing. I've seen that plan. It's at the very bottom of the prepaid plans. Kind of hide it.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. Now you have to go to Walmart and get it.
Is that a good... So T-Mobile, 30 a month, unlimited data and texting, and you only get a small 100 minutes, but 100 minutes a month, that's for most people, that's probably all they do.
Yeah, for me, it worked just fine. The only thing right now is that I'm having a hard time trying to get somebody to give me information as far as making international calls. Because they say that I have to pay the $10 a month.
Right.
But then with the other prepaid account, I have no problems making those calls. And the only thing is that they charge a little more extra.
Right. So you could see that on the T-Mobile site. They have international dialing plans. And you're right. You pay a monthly fee, and then you get a reduced minute rate.
Right.
But you'd have to you just have to figure it out. Uh-huh. Is it worth it for me to pay the month? How much you call internationally is going to be?
Well, I hardly call, just like once in a while.
Then it's probably sensible just to pay the full rate and not pay the monthly fee.
Yeah, because I was just trying to find information, and I can't seem to get nobody to straight out.
Come on, T-Mobile. You're supposed to be the uncarrier. You're supposed to be the good guys in all this. So have you gone to my experience is the T-Mobile stores, they're very helpful.
Oh, okay.
So don't call. Calling a rep, almost anybody.
Right.
It seems like that's not as good as if there's a person. It's normal. Humans, if you're face-to-face with somebody, you do a better job. I think you do a better job than if you're on the phone with somebody.
Yeah, I think so, too. Just finding the right person is the only problem.
I agree. There should be a T-Mobile store near you. They're all over the place.
Yeah, there is a lot.
Don't go to the third-party T-Mobile. Go to a company, a factory store. And my experience with them is they're great. They applaud me when I go in there and buy a phone. They go, yay. Either they're very desperate or they're nice people.
Right. Go.
Could be both. Uh-huh. I think this is – T-Mobile is being very aggressive. You know, they have international data for free now. It's not the fastest, but it's free. They've got the $30 plan. Nobody's giving you anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that they're a great little carrier. You know, they're in play right now. I think is it Sprint that's trying to buy them? And I hope that doesn't happen because we need the competition.
I always like the GSM better for some reason, just having the SD card and all that stuff. It works better for me.
Hey, thank you, Juan. I appreciate the call and the tip, because I think a lot of people are going to run over to the prepaid plans and look at that $30 a month plan. It's a good deal. Thank you, Juan. Yeah, I would just, you have to do the calculations yourself. Is it worth paying $10 a month to get 3 cents less a minute? Well, it depends on how many minutes you talk. And in many cases, if you're just making the occasional call, it's, you just pay the, whatever it is, 8 cents a minute instead of 5 cents a minute. You'd have to make a lot of, you could figure it out. You'd have to figure out how many minutes it would make it worthwhile. The phone companies know you don't do this, by the way. That's why they make their plans as crazy as possible. They don't want you to figure it out. Just go with your gut. It's almost always wrong. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Viber's good. Viber's good. A lot of people use that. My shields run out in 10 minutes. I better ask for help from the clan. Yeah, coverage is the problem. If you've got good T-Mobile coverage, that's really the carrier to use if you can. But not everybody has. They applaud me because I buy a phone. And their employee, you get, tonight, McDonald's. You're all getting a Big Mac. Leo bought a phone. Yeah. No, it's nice. It was a little embarrassing. I went in there the other day and I bought a SIM card for my home phone. And there's only two people in the store. And the manager is helping me. He sells me the card. He says, hey, Tina, come here. And Tina comes over and the manager, and they go, it's kind of embarrassing. There's more customers in this store than there are sales. It works better when there's 20 employees, two people. So we have in the studio with us two glass explorers. It's so cute. It's so romantic. They're a couple. They both wear glass. They're holding hands. So when you make love, do you both wear glass? No, that's inappropriate. I'm sorry. But no, you just got yours. I'm sorry. What's your name again?
Sarah
and
Joe.
From Indianapolis. Joe or Jeff?
Joe.
So Sarah and Joe. And so you just got yours, Sarah. And Joe, you've had yours since November. He's taking a picture of me. I could tell. So, what do you do? Do you walk around just taking pictures?
We do.
Do you find you're more distracted with each other because you've got this thing over your eyebrow to look at? No.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
People get used to it pretty quick, and it's just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like being able to take the point of view.
Yeah.
Pictures.
Some of the pictures I've seen from glass are fabulous.
Yes.
So.
And I do use them in my plant, too, for operator training.
Oh, you do?
Put it on their head.
See, I think that's maybe the... To me, one of the big uses is for training.
Yeah.
So you're looking, and you've got the manual here, you've got a video there, and you're doing
the
thing.
Hands,
yeah.
See what they're looking at.
I think that's really smart. And, that's what Trey's doing with the Arcanum, which is kind of an interesting idea. He's doing, he's bringing back, the idea of a master-apprentice relationship. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And next, Mike in Albion. Is it Idaho? Hi, Mike.
Yes,
Leo Laporte in Idaho. Welcome.
Yeah. I'm trying to get satellite internet service.
Yeah.
And I call at the service and tell them where I'm at. And they said, oh, well, we don't serve that area.
Okay, wait a minute. Are you on the planet Earth?
Yeah.
Are you in the Northern Hemisphere?
Yes.
What do you have right now?
Oh, back in town. See, I leave and go up in the mountain every year for 6 months.
I'm so jealous. How wonderful.
Oh, it's great.
What mountain is it?
I love it.
What mountain?
Oh, I'm in Idaho. And right now I'll be going up by Sun Valley this summer.
And you have a little cabin up there and you just walk around naked and enjoy the sun and... Say hello to sheep, and there's nothing to do up there. That's probably why you want internet access. Have you checked with Wild Blue? Who did you call?
Yeah, Wild Blue.
And they said we don't serve.
Yeah.
Now, you need to have a view of, I think, the southern sky. Do you not have a view from that side of the mountain?
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, the internet we're using is not so good right now, the Skype. By the way, when you hear that, turn that into a little explanation of how internet telephony works. So if you think about it, all data on the internet is packets, right? Packet 1, 2, 3, 4. Boom, boom, boom. For us to have a conversation, the packets have to arrive in a timely fashion. If they don't, then you get a lot of lag, right? And they should arrive in order. Otherwise, you know, the speech is all scrambled. So it has to be, obviously, has to be played back. 1, 2, 3, 4. It may arrive because the internet's designed this way. 1, 5, 3, 2, 4, 1 again. And then the software, whatever you're using, Skype, I guess, in this case, would have to say, oh, let me rearrange those. But all of this has to happen in you know, milliseconds, because otherwise there's too much lag. What that sound you're hearing is just a dropped packet, a packet that never made it. So what Skype does, which I'm not sure this is the right thing to do, but it's what it does, is it prolongs the previous packet until the next one comes in. It stretches it out. And that's exactly what it sounded like, isn't it? Like he'd say something and until the next one came in. So those are missing packets. So whatever system he was using for internet was not so great. It was dropping a lot of packets. I do not know why Wild Blue would not provide their service in Idaho, especially if you have a view of the southern sky. That's the only limitation of any kind of satellite service, whether it's television or internet. You have to be able to see the satellite. You have to be able to aim the dish at the satellite. A mountain should be perfect for this. I believe that the Wild Blue satellites, just like the DirecTV and Dish satellites, are in the southern sky. That's the most sensible place to put them. So you would need a view of the southern sky. If you were, I guess, on the north face of the mountain, maybe that would be a problem. But he says he's not. Wild Blue's Exceed service is, to my knowledge, the best satellite internet. But it has problems. For instance, there is a lot of latency, lag, because you're getting your data from a satellite and then have to send it back up to a satellite. Admittedly, it travels at the speed of light, but that's still fairly distant. And so as a result, you do get some maybe half second to a second lag as it goes up to the satellite and back down. You've seen that on CNN when they use satellite phones and the anchor asks the reporter a question and then you have to go 1, 2, 3, 4 before the reporter answers it. Same thing. That's okay for email. It's okay even for a browser. Not so great for internet telephony. You don't want to wait 4 seconds for somebody to respond to you on a phone call. It really kind of slows the conversation down. And it's really terrible for gaming. You go around a corner, shoot a guy, and you have to wait 4 seconds to find out if you hit him. That ain't going to work. But they do have good speeds. Actually, we've used Exceed for video, and it's worked quite well. So I think of all the satellite internet services, this is the best. I don't know why you can't get it. And I don't know what to say. I mean, if they say no, they say no. I can't talk them into it, and I'm not sure why not. Maybe somebody will have some insight into that. Thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate it. Lynn in Fountain Valley, California. Hi, Lynn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a kind of question on DSL.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, I got rid of my Verizon home phone, went to Time Warner Cable package. Mm-hmm. Then they raising prices, so I took the phone out and got Ooma, but I no longer have Verizon. Now I want to switch out to internet through DSL.
Okay.
Without having a current home phone service.
Ah, you want dry loop, as they call it. Dry loop can be difficult to get. Who's the carrier, Verizon, in your neighborhood?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have to... It's Verizon sometimes... Verizon's interesting. So I've heard of them doing it, and I've heard of them not doing it. There's no requirement that they offer it. You would think the FCC would have an opinion about this, but apparently they don't. So you need to call up Verizon and find somebody, A, who knows what dry loop is, and then B, who will give it to you.
Okay. Well, I called DSL Extreme, and they run you through an automatic program checking your phone number. And they said, I do qualify, but I'm...
That merely means they have a deal with the carrier in your neighborhood. I would, you know, see if you can get a rep for DSL Extreme. Because if you can get them to negotiate, you might have better luck than you doing it as an individual.
Well, I'm going to try it then.
Yeah. That's one of the, in my opinion, reasons to go with an independent internet service provider is they will deal with the phone company so you don't have to. And no one wants to deal with a phone company. And try get dry loop. Oh, you forget it. The dry loop is having internet access through the copper, but not phone access. Remember, the phone company put the copper in there for phone access, basically, way back when, in the good old days of Ma Bell. And, you know, all of this other stuff is added on later. But so, a lot of times they feel like, well, this is a phone line. You can use it for data, but you got to have a phone line. Verizon's even worse in some respects. When they come in and put fiber, they frequently cut the copper so they don't have to deal with this. And that's another issue. You know, remember that Verizon doesn't necessarily like DSL Extreme or any internet service provider besides Verizon because they offer internet service. They're a competitor. The FCC has required that they give internet service providers access to the central office. They've required they open up the lines, but they don't have to like it. And they'll put up all sorts of roadblocks, I'm afraid. Pat in San Bernardino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm good. Welcome.
I'm just wondering, as such a busy guy as you are, how you manage your calendar.
I have people who do that for me. No, I use Google Calendar. I love Google Calendar. That gives me access to my calendar anywhere I can get online. And then on the various hardware I use, they have Google Calendar interfaces, Macs, Windows. You could always use the browser, but I use on the Mac BusyCal, which logs in. My phones do the same, and that way I have a central calendar, and people can even send me invites and add, if I let them, add to my calendar. Works great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sarah and Joe visiting for Indianapolis. Yep. There are only two couples in the whole nation, except maybe Larry Page and his girlfriend, who both wear Google Glass. One's in Florida, and then you guys are in Indy. And how's it been? Is it fun wearing the glasses with the camera all the time? And
we've been wandering around San Francisco.
They've been taking pictures around San Francisco, and that's really neat. Well, so nice to meet you. Thank you for visiting. It's not a little weird. Not weird. Do you think it's weird? Glass is this Google thing. It's very expensive. It's $1,500. Right now it's in the, you know, they call it Explorer program where people who are, you know, like really early adopters wear it. But it's like glasses. It's like glasses frames, just the top. And there's a screen over your right eyebrow. It's not, it's not a heads up display. You know, you're not looking at it all the time. You're only if you look up there. And then you can do things like if you swipe your temple, you could take a picture. You could say, okay, Glass, take a picture, and it'll take a picture. Or you can look up directions or watch videos, stuff like that. And they've also set up that if you bob your head, it will do that. And you can also hack it so if you wink. See, this is what I don't like. If you wink, it takes a picture. Ooh. So basically what you have is people walking around with cameras attached to their heads, winking. Does it bother you, the notion that somebody who's wearing, I mean, I guess you know they're wearing it because it's fairly obvious. It just bothers me a little bit.
At least they haven't broken that couples code thing of wearing matching shirts.
Their glass does not, wait a minute, they were wearing matching shirts.
Oh, they were.
But not matching Google Glass. He had blue, she had white, so it's
his
okay.
And hers. Ta-da.
I had a big debate with Jeff Jarvis, who's he's a guy who believes in public, you know, being public, being out there, being out in the open. Because there is a guy who was wearing glass in a movie theater. And the movie theater owner called the Department of Homeland Security on him. And he was not only taken out of the theater, but questioned by the feds for an hour or two. Because he was wearing Google Glass in the theater. Now, I agree that that's overreaction. However, believe it or not, because of its copyright law, if you bring a camcorder into a theater, that is the Department of Homeland Security that I guess investigates ICE, which is under a DHS. So it's as if he had a camcorder in the theater. And I guess the fear is, motion picture industry is worried about people, and this happens all the time, recording movies and then selling the recordings. So it is against the law, and it's of course against theater policy for somebody to take a recording device in the theater. Now, we all have smartphones in our pockets, but I presume if you took it out and you held it and you recorded the screen, you'd get thrown out pretty quick. And some theater owners might call the cops, or in this case, the feds. The feds, he said, am I arrested? They said, no, you're not arrested. We just want to ask some questions. He said, look, I'm not taking pictures of the screen. Here, look at what's on my... They didn't want to see what's under the glass. They asked him, he said, a lot of questions. Finally, after an hour, they looked at... You know, they got a computer. They couldn't really figure it out. Hooked up a USB cable and looked at what he had pictures of. None of it was the movie, so they let him go. So here's my... Now, this is my position on it. Of course, the theater reactor owner overreacted. Nevertheless, I understand the theater owner has a right to, if you're videotaping the screen, to kick you out. And there's no way with glass to know that he's not videotaping the screen. He's wearing the camera on his head. So in my opinion, if you are a Google Glass person, if you're wearing your Google Glass, it would probably behoove you to not wear it in a movie theater. Now, it's a little more complicated because this guy says, but these are my prescription glasses. See, he attached Google Glass to his prescription eyeglasses. I think if you're going to do that, you need another pair. I don't think you have the right to wear a camera on your forehead in a movie theater. And even if, whether you're doing something nefarious or not, even if you do, it just would behoove you not to. Similarly, if you're wearing those and you go into a men's room, it may kind of behoove you to take them off and put them in your pocket. I don't think that's too much to ask. It's just, it seems like common courtesy. And this is one reason I think some people do not like people who wear glass, because they act kind of entitled. No, I have the right to wear these things on my head. Take them off. Get another pair. It shouldn't be your only pair of glasses. The movie chain AMC that did this has since announced a policy that you may not wear Google Glass in the theater, and that's their right. It's a private enterprise. I could do that if I wanted. I could say you can't wear glass in our studio. I don't care. But it seems to me that while overreaction, you know, to call the FBI or the Department of Homeland Security is overreaction, the guy should have been thrown out of the theater or asked politely, please take your glass off. I can't. It's my glasses. Well, that's your problem, not mine. You cannot wear a camcorder on your forehead. In our theater. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. That what happens is that people... technology moves fast. Faster than the culture can move to keep up. And I think if you're going to be an early adopter on the cutting edge, you have a little bit of an obligation to consider the fact that culture is catching up with you. It's not... It's your responsibility, not theirs, in my opinion. Pat, did I answer your question? You're looking for a calendar to keep track of all your stuff. Are you on Windows or Mac?
You know, that's kind of my question is, like, even across platforms, what's the best? Like, even if I have to spend a whole bunch of money.
I love Google Calendar. You could use, you know, Microsoft has Outlook Calendar. You could use that. But Google Calendar seems to work with everything. What kind of phone do you carry?
I'm on my 5S right now.
Okay. iOS, both Android and iPhones work great with Google Calendar. You just add Google, you know, add your Google account to your iPhone, and then in this box of what to sync, you in addition to email if you wish and addresses if you wish, you can sync your calendar. That means changes on your iPhone go to Google Calendar and vice versa. People can email you if you have a Gmail account, email you calendar appointments, and it will, if you wish, be automatically added to your calendar, or you can accept or reject and then have it added. I just find it very flexible. It's how I do everything is Google Calendar.
Do you ever do files across your calendar?
You can. Google Drive supports file exchange, so you can put a link to a Google Drive file. Sure, I'm not sure that would be the best way to do it, but you could put a URL in there. When I invite, for instance, if I have a meeting, I'll invite people to the meeting via... Now, this is a little bit of a change. In business, they're really used to Outlook calendars. It's funny because the company I do business with for this radio show said, we sent you a calendar invite. I said, well, what? Well, we sent you a... she said, I sent you an Outlook. And I said, well, you know, I don't use Outlook. In fact, you know, you can't assume that people are using Outlook. Careful, that motorcycle just got very close.
You know, it's a yard sale. I was hoping to buy it.
There it goes. Right. I'm sorry I kept you on hold too long. You lost out.
No. But, you know, the calendar is such an important part of people's lives because it's based on time. And that's a really important thing in people's lives. So I'm really trying to figure out what is the best calendar program.
Well, what would best be? Best would be universal, right? It would work with whatever hardware you were using. It'd be easy for people to see it if you wanted to. You can share Google Calendar. Easy for people to add items to your calendar. My assistant is trusted, so she can add to my calendar. You could share calendars with your family members. To me, Google's got it licked. There is nothing better than Google Calendar.
I really appreciate that, Leo.
Strongly recommend it, and it's free. Love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, it was probably ICE. It was probably not Department of Homeland Security itself, but Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is under the DHS, and they enforce copyright. It's kooky. But even if it was just the police in the interior, let me see if I can find the story. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It comes a time in every show when we must stop taking calls and talk to the gizwiz. Dick T. Bartolo is here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He is a gadget hound. He's been doing this for years.
Yes.
And he is here buried and up to his neck in snow. How much snow did you get in Manhattan? I heard you were shoveling your boat.
Yeah, I got about a foot in the city.
Oh, I was hoping for more.
No, that's plenty. It's just cold. It's not going to be above freezing for another week.
Oh, come on. You live in New York. That's the price you pay. You don't like it? Come out here to California.
No, if that was the only price I paid, I'd be happy. But on top of that, there's rent.
Oh, they charge you rent. Well,
yeah,
can't help you there.
Well, so anyway, this is a gadget one would expect would be coming from the folks who make weird gadgets and have people bid on them or tell us how to invent them. This is the Power Pot. Now, do you know what the Power Pot is, Leo?
Well, it's legal in Colorado and Washington State. I know that. No, what is?
I know you are going to go there.
What is the Power Pot?
All right, so you're on a camping trip, and you have a lot of sticks around, and your cell phone is dead, and you don't have a charger. The Power Pot has a little thermoelectric generator, so as you're cooking, you can charge your phone. Now it's
Wait. As you're cooking,
you can charge your phone.
Phone charges.
Okay, so being 7 degrees out, I decided not to build a bonfire in the backyard, and I would just try it on my stove.
So what is it that you're using? It's not the stove. It's a pot that goes on the stove.
Exactly. So the little thermoelectric generator is inside the pot.
This is a pot with a USB cord coming out of it.
Exactly. Well, they don't want you to melt your phone, so there's 3 feet of fire-resistant cable, which is clever. So you can run the USB, and it terminates in a USB dongle, so you can plug your phone. You can plug your phone into that, so it puts out 5 volts.
And you're boiling water.
And you're boiling water at the same time, so you could be making tea and charging your phone. So I put the water in, put it on the stove, stretched out the 3-foot cable, which has a little LED light on it, charging light. Took just 10 seconds for the charging light to come on. Plugged in my Galaxy S4. In 1 second, it went into lightning bolt, came on. Phone charging.
How much water do you have to boil to charge the phone all the way?
Well, you would have to charge, you would have to boil water for an hour to bring it to do a full charge. Okay. So, yes, I know. So it's sort of a solution in search
of... But you might be boiling for an hour. You might be.
Yeah.
Now, can you just... I guess you just keep the pot boiling for no good reason and charging your phone.
Well, you know what? It works best with the difference between the heat and the water. So if you wanted to keep the phone charging at max, the best thing would be keep adding cold water.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not just the heat. You actually, it's the difference between the water and the
difference between the temperature of the two. Okay. It's just, as I said, the name had escaped me for a minute, but it's the people. You would expect this to be from Corky, but it's not. It's there at thepowerpot.com, and it's pricey. It's $149.
Our resident priest and camper, I don't know how those go together.
Oh, yes.
Father Robert Ballasaire reviewed it. He loved it.
Oh, good. Okay.
And, you know, there's an additional thing. If you want to sterilize your phone, you can just throw it in the pot while it's boiling, and you could kill two birds with one stone.
It's two in one. Yeah. Well, you know what? I wondered, because we were at CES together doing stuff at TWIT, and I said, my phone's dead. He said, give it to me. I'll be back in an hour. So I was wondering. Now I know. And it smelled of charcoal when he handed it.
It was very woodsy. Yeah, very woodsy feeling. Very cool. Dick DiBartolo's website is gizwiz.biz. You can go there and play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for either figuring out what a close-up picture of a gadget is or isn't. Either way.
Yeah. Either way. That's right.
And, of course, he joins us every week for the Gizwiz. And if you're watching the stream on our Twit network, twit.tv, he'll be here in a few minutes to do the Giz Fizz, where he interviews a lucky member of the audience.
Yes.
Thank you, Dickie D. Stay warm.
Thank you, sir. You too.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, man. I think we have time for another call. Let's see. Chris. Who should I talk to? Chris? Chris in Miami, Florida, I'm believing, unless it's Miami of Ohio. Hello, Chris.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is a privilege.
C'est moi.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? How much snow in Miami today?
Well, let's just say it's a nice, comfortable 76, my friend. Back at you.
What can I do for you, Chris?
Well, same question as last week. Got Apple on the phone this past week. Mavericks is kind of still touch and go. I have a late 09 Mac, and it's got the 4 gigs going to 8, but okay. Don't know if that will make a difference. So
It shouldn't. 4 gigs is plenty.
Okay.
You know, you need 8 if you're doing big Photoshop files or more. Nowadays, it's so cheap to buy extra memory that I typically will use 8 gigs of RAM. But for it's not like you're going to see it's not going to work. It's if anything, it'll be slightly slower.
Okay.
So your issue last week was that just Mavericks was unreliable, or
it's just slow. I can open up three or four programs.
Slow.
Yeah. Files this week, and it seems like it's better. But I think it's the operating system. I'm not going to blame the Mac.
It might be that more if it's slow and you're doing a lot of things at once, more RAM would help. It certainly doesn't hurt to put 8 gigs in. Okay. I think what happens is you'll see if I were to graph amount of RAM on the up down axis and on the left right axis and speed on the up down axis, you'd see a big increase. The curve would look like a hockey stick. You'd see a upside down hockey stick. You see a big increase at first. From, say, 4 to 8, and then less of an increase. Pretty soon it flatlines out. You can add more RAM, and nothing's going to speed up. And I think probably 8 gigs is kind of the sweet spot. If 4 to 8, you're probably going to see a speed improvement. 8 to 12 or 8 to 16, you're going to see a much smaller speed improvement, and smaller from then on. I drew that graph completely wrong, but you get the idea.
I do, yeah.
What is that? It's a plateau. It's not a hockey stick. It's a plateau.
It's a plateau.
Plateau, yeah.
Well, I know you're a sports fan, and I respect you for that.
I try to get hockey into every conversation. Hey, Chris, it's great to talk to you. Look, stay in touch. I'm hoping that it'll work all right. Mavericks is not great, I admit. We talked about this earlier. iOS 7, also full of bugs. Apple will fix it. It might take a little while. I generally tell people with operating systems, you never want to use the one that first came out. You don't want to use the first update. You want to use the second update. But we're past that point with both iOS and Mavericks, and it seems like it should be more reliable. It really, really is. Jew makes a good point, J-O-O, in our chat room. He says if you go to the Activity Monitor program, you can launch Activity. It's in the Utilities folder. You can watch RAM usage, and that might give you an idea of, you know, if it's hitting the swap file more than you think, that maybe some more RAM would make things faster. There's a tab in the activity monitor you can look at. Hey, thanks for the call, Chris. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.